Okay, we begin here on the bottom of Nun Gimel Mudbet. Tanur Banan, Ein Machmitzin B'Tapuchim. You can't use apples in order to ferment, to create the rising of the Minachot, those Minachot that do require that they become Chametz. Yishum Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Amru Machmitzim. On the other hand, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says you can't use it. Rav Kahana Matnila B'Rabbi Chanina ben Tradvim. He switches the attribution to Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion. So now, what we're speaking about seemingly, when it says here, tapuchim, is mitz tapuchim, it means apple juice, and not tapuchim themselves. But, we're gonna see in a second that the Gemara says, Kaman Azla Ha Ditnan, who is this Mishnah in Trumot follow? Tapuach Shirisko. You have an apple that they made into apple sauce. And then they placed it into the dough, and then it fermented. That's problematic. So if you look in the Balei HaTosafot, down below, Tapuach Shirisko, he says, Pliga b'mechametz b'meimav. That's only when you're using the juice. Aval b'mechametz b'gufo mutar. If you're using the actual apples, then that's not a question. So Tosfot over here, interestingly enough, even when the Gemara switches from tapuach or tapuchim, which seems to indicate that we're speaking of juice, versus over here where it's tapuach shivisko, something about apple sauce, where you crushed or mushed an apple, nevertheless, the Balei Tosfot still say in this situation that we're speaking about the apple juice and not the apples themselves. There are those that disagree, obviously, and believe that even the apples themselves have that capacity, and the same machloket would exist even when you're dealing with the physical apples, not just with the apple juice. Come on, who's this Mishnah like? Leima Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. He sounds like this sheet of Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, that apple juice has the capacity to ferment. Below Rabbanon, not the Rabbanon who think that that's not the case. When it says the filoteinu Rabbanon, this even could be the Rabbanon. Nehi de chametz gamur lo avi. It doesn't create full-fledged chametz, nuksha mi'ahavi. On the hand, it does create chametz nuksha. Rashi over here says about chametz nuksha, lashon ra'ua. Klomar chametz shafel. It's a low-class chametz, meaning something that does not rise fully, something that does not take on the full shame of chametz. It's some subpar type of chametz, chametz nuksha we're familiar with from the Gemara and Psachim. But interestingly enough, and this is what I noted yesterday, the Gemara never offers, how do you know that the Chametz Nuksha is problematic? The Mishnah that we're quoting is a Mishnah from Shuma, and over there, the capacity of the Mechametz, the item that's going to cause the rising of the fermentation, then influences the whole item. So if you have a Mechametz that's Shuma, then that'll affect the whole item, and it'll all be Shuma, and that's what means Asura. In our situation, when we're speaking about Menachot, it's a different question. It's not a question as to whether you have something that is truma or not truma. It's a question as to whether this is chametz or not classified as chametz. Is it chametz enough so that you can use it for the shtei lechem, for the lechem atodah? Or is it not chametz enough in order to use it for that? Now over here you say that chametz nuksha, it still is, which implies that the chametz nuksha, according to the chachamim, is problematic with regards to the truma, because since it is influencing the entirety of that which is there, it all has the shame truman and it'll become a surah. Whereas by the case here of the menachot, chametz nuksha would not be sufficient in order to be problematic. But according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, it is full-fledged chametz, which is interesting only because the Balei Tosafot yesterday also spoke, as we noted before, even though we have no clear evidence of the fact that chametz nuksha with regards to menachot is problematic, we have that by Pesach and by Chametz and Pesach because it says Kol Machmetzet. And therefore there is a view that Kol Machmetzet would include Chametz Nuksha. So that's an Isur Lav, but not an Isur Karet. So it's not included under your normal rubric of Chametz. It's its own category of Chametz and requires a special Riboy to tell you that by Chametz on Pesach that it is restricted. But how do you know that that's the case with regards to Menachot? And Tosafot said yesterday, "B'shema yeshum yitur b'todah menachot chametz nuksha chasuv chametz gabayu." Maybe there's some sort of term or inclusionary term that tells us that chametz nuksha is problematic by menachot. So Tosafot again does not offer what the source is for this fact. But from the Gemara over here, it seems that when it comes to Chametz Nuksha, there is a problem with regards to Menachot, at least according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. But again, it offers no reason as to why. If you believe that Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel thinks that it's Chametz Gamur, then you can understand why it's a problem by Menachot. Whereas for the Chachamim, who say that it's Chametz Nuksha over here, they are suggesting that by Truma, that Chametz Nuksha is enough to make it Asur. And as Tosfos points out, it seems like, why do you need that at all? Because by the case of Truma, you don't need it to be Chametz, you just need it to be influential in order for it to affect the whole item. They were not looking for Chametz, we're looking for an item that affects the entirety of what's there, and that makes it a Surah. So whether it's Mechametz or not Mechametz really seems to make no difference, a question of how influential it is, if it gives over time, if it gives flavor. Anything that it does would then cause a problem. Although Mechametz, something that is an object that ferments, then has disproportionate power inside of an object. And even if it's not notain tam, the fact that it is a mechametz will influence the entirety of the object. That might be the point over there. But if you believe that chametz nuksha is this subpar chametz that by truma is influential enough to cause a problem, but nevertheless, by menachot, according to the chachamim, it's not influential, then you don't have an issue because then we never have chametz nuksha being a surah by menachot. Chanim and Gamliel believes that it is full-fledged chametz. Chamim believe it's only chametz nuksha, and that chametz nuksha is not good enough by menachot, it's not chametz by menachot, and that'd be fine. On the other hand, if you believe that Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, who says that machmitzim, that this is sufficient chametz to make it by menachot, that it's classified as chametz, then it might be that he thinks that chametz nuksha is sufficient by menachot, as the Chamim believe that it's not sufficient, and then you need a source for that fact that Chametz Nuksha is sufficient by Menachot. That's what Tosafot said yesterday. I don't know where we know this from, but at least it must be some sort of riboy, just like they have a special riboy by the Chametz of Pesach. Now, as to what is happening over here, there's a very large Tosafot that discusses this. It's a problem that arises here as well as by Pesach, which is, what is the story with Mei Peirot? Can fruit juices actually cause fermentation, cause arising, and therefore that would have impact on matzah ashira, which is that matzot that are made with fruit juices, are they good matzah, or are they not chametz, or do you have to worry about chametz at all? Machloket here in the Rishonim, Rashi Shita, as you can see on the bottom of the previous Amud, where he says, Eimach mitzin l'shtei lechem v'toda b'tabuchim, t'lo havi chametz me'alyo. It's not full-fledged chametz. So that's what Rashi says about the position of the Chachamim, that which is done here with regards to the Tabuchim, is not full-fledged Chametz. It's some sort of subpar Chametz, so therefore it's not good enough to be a Mincha, but seemingly is good enough to cause a Chametz, at least a Chametz Nuksha, to take place, and that's what the Shita of the Chachamim is later. It is Chametz Nuksha, but not sufficiently Chametz to be good enough for the Mincha. But that means that fruit juices alone have the capacity to cause chametz. And that is the view of Rashi, as well as the view of the Bali Tosafot, which I'll show you in a second. There is another view within the Rishonim, and that is brought here by the Bali Tosafot in the name of the Rabbeinu Tam, but includes many other Rishonim. The Mefereish Rabbeinu Tam, Kishinolosha b'mei peirot b'fnei atzman, b'lo tarovet ma'im, ein machmitzin. If you use just fruit juice, it has no capacity to become chametz. It is totally fine. There is no chametz. That means if you make matzah shira, you make it with mei peirot, it would not be problematic in terms of chametz. It'd be totally fine. May not be able to use it for matzah, but it's clearly not chametz, and you should be able to eat it on Pesach. But if you add water, then it's machmitz. If you add water to the fruit juices together, then it causes fermentation, then it causes rising. And then that will cause it to be, as the Rabbeinu Tam says over here, not full-fledged chametz, but subpar chametz. So according to Rashi in the Bali Tosafot, the sugya is talking about fruit juices and plain fruit juices. That mei peirot by themselves do create chametz, but chametz nuksha. Mei peirot together with mayim actually creates chametz gamur. The Rabbeinu Tam, the sugya is not speaking about fruit juices, it's speaking about fruit juices mixed with water. And then that fruit juice with the water causes the fermentation. Had it been fruit juices alone, it would not have been problematic at all. So that's the view of the Rabbeinu Tam. And Rabbeinu Tam proves that without water, there is no rising, there is no fermentation that takes place. And therefore, by itself, there's no fermentation if you don't have water mixed in. the Baal Tosafot back away from their Rabbeinu Tam and then explain like Rashi, because they say the Rishami Mashma to make Peirot to feel b'fin atzman machmitzin. Fruit juices alone have the capacity to cause fermentation, cause it to be matzah, at least chametz nuksha, and therefore it's problematic, and therefore the Baal Tosafot come to a conclusion. Uperizeh mutar lalush isa bebeitzim bepesach. According to that Perush, meaning the Rabbeinu Tam, you could use eggs to make matzah on Pesach, egg matzah, as long as you don't put in water together with it, about melach shari, but you can add in salt. So that is the view of the Rabbeinu Tam, that matzah shira, or egg matzah, should be totally fine on Pesach. But, of course, Rashi is extremely influential, so influential that Rashi, against many of the other Rishonim, believes that, first of all here, that fruit juices alone and beitzim alone can cause chametz, can cause the problem of chametz. In addition, he believes that when it says in the Gemara that mei perot ein machmitzin, means that they don't cause fermentation at a normal rate. They actually create fermentation at an accelerated pace. So Rashi believes that it's not that they don't create fermentation, they create fermentation at a faster pace than even water would alone. That sheet in Rashi is so influential that today we don't eat matzah ashira. We don't eat matzah with mei peiro. We don't eat matzah with eggs because of Rashi. Most of the other Rishonim disagree with Rashi and believe that mei peiro or eggs alone cannot create chimutz. Not only does it not accelerate, it doesn't even create chimutz at all. And therefore, you wouldn't have to worry about it, and anything made with those items would have been fine on Pesach. Do you understand from that how much influence Rashi has over the halachic process? That even though he's a dat yachid with regards to these matters, and most others disagree with him, nevertheless he carries so much weight that we follow that shita of Rashi. As you can see here, his grandson, the Rabbeinu Tam, disagrees, the Rambam disagrees as well. The difference between the Rambam and the Rabbeinu Tam is that they both believe that when you mix water in there, it causes fermentation. Just the Rabbeinu Tam believes when you put water and mei peiro together, it only creates chametz nuksha. Whereas according to the Rambam, it can create full-fledged chametz when you add water to it. But without water, they both agree that nothing happens, and that there's no problem on Pesach. But here you can see the Baal Tosafot taking into consideration Rashi, saying, "Mu yeshlin tot ula hachmir," that you should be machmir, dula ulam, afilu below mayim, nehi dechameitz gomur lahavi, nuksha mihavi, stating the position of Rashi, that even without water, it creates chameitz nuksha, not full-fledged chameitz. And then he brings reasons as to why we don't allow it in certain instances, trying to explain those Gemaras that don't necessarily align with that position. So therefore, we have here three different views as to how to read this Gemara. As Rashi is reading the Gemara as tapuchim, being literally just fruit juices, and Tosafot, in the end, seems to agree that that's possible. You have the Rabbeinu Tam reading that it must be fruit juice with water that can create chametz nuksha. And you have the Rambam who's saying you can have fruit juices with water that can generate even chametz gomur. Although obviously the answer of the Gemara here with regards to the Mishnah and Truma presents a problem for the Rambam Shita, because here it says that mei peirot, if it's with water, according to the Rambam, it makes chametz gomur. If there's no water, it's not machmitz at all. So then why does it say chametz nuksha over here? So what you have to explain is that the Rambam thinks the problem by Truma is not a problem of chametz nuksha, but lav davka is a problem of tam. That it's notein tam, it flavors the item, and that's why it's a problem of truma, not because of the fermentation or the creation of chametz. Right now, the Gemara continues and says, Amar v'ilo, in lacha kasher l'kmitza yoter m'minchat chuteh. There's nothing harder to take off a kmitza from than a minchat chuteh. Rabbi Yitzchak bar Avadim amar, minchat chuteh migavla b'mayim u'ksheira. What's the big deal? You knead it with water, and it is kasher. Lema b'hakam iflegei. What exactly is their machloket over here as to whether the kmitza that's taken off the minchat chuteh is difficult or is not difficult? Amar sabar kamot shehein misha'arinon. Umar sabar the kamot shehayu misha'arinon. Question is, how do you measure the kometz that is in the hand of the kohen at this time? You have a kometz that you're taking off. When you take off the kometz, do we look at the current status or the current state of whatever is there? If he gets a kometz or whatever it is in its current state, he's fine. Or we have to measure it based on its original state. At this point, the Gemara is assuming that both of them believe that you mix it with water, even though we know that a minchat chuteh is a minchat chareva, it's a dry mincha, which means that there's no shemen and no levona. So So that is as far as shemen and labona. Mayim, water, you can, because you can eat it with water. Once you add water, it turns into dough. The dough has a different density, different volume than the flour itself. So now, how do you measure? When you take off the kometz, you're taking off the kometz when it's already a dough, not when it's flour. Do you have to measure it now and say, listen, I took off a kometz, it's dough now, I took a kometz off, I'm fine, because I took off a kometz, that's it. Measure it at its current state. Or do we say you have to get in a kometz worth of flour, which is the original isaron that you have there, you have to get a kometz worth of flour. But now it's dough. So you have to ensure whatever dough is in your hand equates to a kometz worth of that flour when it was in its original state. So that would explain the machloket here, which is Rabbi Elah, who says that it's extremely difficult, is saying you have to go and measure it based on its original status. So here you're taking dough, but you have to get to a capacity that was what flour was in there in the original, what would be in your kometz. Because the problem is the kmitza itself must be done from the dry area to get to the right quantity. And so therefore your only choice left is to take it off while it is flour before you put water in it and kneaded it, the area that is the kmitza. And that's why Rabbi Elah says it's so difficult to do a kmitza when it's just flour, as we're going to discuss in a minute on the Minchat Choteh. Whereas Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi says you knead it with the water, and now you take it off. Whatever it is, it is. So then it's not so hard. It says, lo, tukuli ama kamoche misharina. Everybody agrees that you do it based on its current state. Ubahaka miflagi. This is their machloket. The marasava mai chareva, chareva mishemen. The Yitzchak Bar Avdimi says when you say it's a dry mincha, it means you can't put oil in it. As the Pasuk says, v'chol mincha blula b'shemen v'chareva, implying that that which is not blula b'shemen is called chareva. And that's why the Minchat Choteh is known as a Minchat Chareva. Marsava chareva mikol davar. The other hand, Rabbi Elah says that it means dry. Dry means dry, literally dry. No shemen, no water. It is a minchav solet, but solet that never has any shemen, water, anything added to it. And the difficulty is, as Rashi notes over here, when the Kohen takes the kometz with the dry flour and then wipes it off with his thumb and his pinky, that when you have something that is more solid in nature, then you can push things off and the remainder will stay inside your hand. When you're dealing with a powder, basically, a very fine flour, when you wipe it off, stuff in the inside could slip out. And the bottom, things can slip out because there's nothing binding it inside of your hand. When there's water or shemen in the flour, it binds together. And therefore, when you wipe it off, you're taking off a solid object on top. You make a slice across the top with your thumb. So you take off any excess, but the remainder stays inside because it's a solid. On the other hand, if it's all flour and you push off the top, some of the flour on the inside might come out as well. And so that's the machloka between them is whether it's completely dry, and that's what makes it difficult to take the kometz off, or dry means no shemen, no livona, no richness to it, but plain water is fine. If you do that already, then you're dealing with the dough, and that's much easier to deal with in terms of kometz. But they both agree that we go after the current state, and it means that in a state of dough, that's the kometz they have to get. We don't worry about the flour, the original size of flour that would have been the kometz that's there. It's not autumn. We have a Mishnah in Uksin. It deals with the shiurim for tum'ah. In order to have a shear to convey tum'ah, the item has to be at least a kabetza in size. That's tum'ah tochlim. It's only conveyed when you have at least a kabetza worth of the object. Rashi in a number of places in Shas also thinks for kabbalat tum'ah that you possibly need a kabetza. Rabbeinu Tam seems to say something similar, but most believe that a koshu is mikabel tum'ah, but for conveyance in tum'ah you need at least a kabetza. So here's a situation in which basara egel, you have calf meat, shinit pach, that expanded. And then you have meat from an older animal, shinit ma'ich, that was reduced or shriveled up. So you have something that swelled and something that shriveled up. So in its original state, the items had a different shiur. Where the calf meat, in its original state, had less than a shiur, less than a kabetza. Then it swelled to the point where it is a kabetza. And vice versa. You have an older animal that started out as a kabetza, and then it shriveled down to less than a kabetza. It's not necessarily that it has to be basar egel or basar zekenina. They're just talking about behoveh. It's more likely that the fresher and younger meat will swell or have more liquid in it that will cause it, when it's boiled, to swell. Versus the older meat, which either because it has less liquid in it, it will shrivel over time, or when you cook it, because of the hardness of the meat, it will shrivel over time rather than expand. So it seems to be it's a practical question, not really whether it's a calf or an older cow. That's just what will happen in those situations and those scenarios. But if it happens to either one of the meats, it would be the same din. Mishtarin l'kamot shehein. We look at them in the status that they are. Rav, Rav Chia, Rav Yochanan Amreim, Mishtarin kamot shehein. Shmuel, Rabbi Shimon, Virabi. Rabbi Mishlokish Amreim, Mishtarin l'kamot shehein. Obviously, it can't be the same thing. So many change the gears over here, the kamot shihayu, and that will take place throughout the sugya. Many times the sugya will say that the two pinions are the same, the kamot shehein, the kamot shehein. Well then what's the difference between them? So the answer could be that it means kamot shehein achshav versus kamot shehein bavar. That's really might be what they're saying, but that's easier to say or easier to see when you say kamot shehein and kamot shehayu, because then it's obvious from the statements what they're saying. So you have a mishnah that says that you mishtarin kamot shehein. You look at them in their current state. We ignore what they were in the previous time. We look at them now in their current state. And that was the conclusion of the previous Gemara, that everybody agrees we look at things in the present. We don't look at where they came from or what their side was in the past. Then we bring a machloket. It's a multi-tiered machloket. You can see here that there are three opinions on each side. You have Rav versus Shmuel. You have Rabbi Chia versus Rabbi Shimon b'Rebbe. And you have Yochanan versus Reish Lakish. So Rav and Shmuel are Bar Pluktot in Bavel, first generation Amoraim in Bavel. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are first generation Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael arguing. Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi are last generation Tanaim. They are peers. Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi are both students of Rabbi. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was the Misadar of Mishnah. So his son and Rabbi Chia were both Tamidim and his also argue about this matter. And so you have three of them, Rav, Rav Chia, and Rav Yochanan, believe that everything goes off their current state, whereas Shmuel, Rav Shimon bar Rabbi, and Reish Lakish believe that you go kamot shehayu in their original state. So now, obviously, this Mishnah that we just brought from Uksin is a problem. If you believe kamot shehayu, then why does the Mishnah say kamot shehein? So, meitvei, basar egel, shlo yabo kishiur, basar egel that did not have that shiur, vitafach, ve'amad al kishiur. And it swells to the point where now it is a kabetza in size. Tahor, lisha abar. In the past, it was tahor, meaning retroactively it's tahor. Vitamei mikanonoba. Prospectively, it is tamei. From here to forward, it has the correct size. It is tamei. So now that would be a serious problem for those that believe that you go after the original state, not the current state. Why in its current state should it matter? Go by the original state, it had less than a shiur, it shouldn't be tamei at all. My answer is midrabanan. That's a rabbinic imposition. Midoraita in achanami. You would go after the original state. Midrabanan, we impose here and say that now it's expanded to the shi'ur that's necessary. Therefore, you are subject to tuma midrabanan. Iochi ema seifa. If that's the case, how are you going to explain the latter half of that? V'chein v'pigul, v'chein v'notar. The same is true by pigul v'notar. Now, pigul v'notar don't inherently have tumah associated with them. Pigul v'notar are isurim, things that you may not consume. Yamar bishlama doraita. If you say the reisha was speaking about a Torah principle, which means that when it expands, it now becomes prospectively, possibly tamei, or it can convey tumah prospectively. That is, if you say it's a Torah principle, hainu deika pigul v'notar. Then you can explain the latter half over here, that pigul and notar are also affected by a doraita problem. They were less than a kezayit, and then they expanded to a kezayit. A kezayit is the level where the isur is problematic. So beforehand they were under a kezayit, now they're above a kezayit, and I understand what you're talking about. Eliyam arter abonan, if you're saying this is only in a rabbinic imposition, meaning that when it expands, there's only prospectively tuma midrabanan, pigul v'notar bidrabanan mi'iko. Where is there a dindrabonan by pigul v'notar? Pigul notar are isurim. And isurim, the threshold is a kezayit. There's no shir drabanan by pigul v'notar. So the Gemara answer is, ema b'chein b'tum'at pigul b'chein b'tum'at notar. So there we're not speaking about the isur of pigul notar, we're speaking about the tumah that is caused by pigul v'notar. The tumah of pigul notar is only tumah midrabanan. And that is based on the Gemara in Pesachim, that they were mitakein or gozer because of atzlei kuhuna, because of the lazy kohanim, that if they didn't take care of the nota, or if they were deficient and made something to pigul, that it would make them tamei. It was a penalty to the kohen, because if kohen is tamei, then it's precluded from participating in the eating of the kodoshim, and can't eat truma. And a kohen, that's his main staple, is kodoshim and kodshei gvul truma. If you make him tamei, that's a real penalty, because he can't eat them that which he's entitled to. So they penalized them for being involved with pigul and notar in order to stop the kohenim from leaving stuff over, in order to stop the kohenim from causing pigul. So that is an imposition, midrabanan, of tumah. Sa'kadat chamina hold v'tumat pigul v'tumat notar dirabonon hi. Since that tumah is only rabbinic in nature, kula hai b'dirabanan lo ovid rabbonon, that far the rabbonan didn't go and go there. In essence, becomes a rabbonan built on top of another dirabonon. The first dirabonan is that there is even tumah by pigul notar. Secondly, when it expands to get above the threshold shiur, that there is tumah, is also only rabbinic in nature, according to those that believe that you go after their original state, not their current state. So now you have two drabanons. So you would have a havamina that you shouldn't impose two drabanons on here. Kamash malan, that we do say it. Therefore, according to those that believe that we go kamot shehayu, that is the latter opinions that say that we always go after the original state of the item. So the original state of the item was below the threshold shiur. So if it's below the threshold shiur, first of all, it can't convey tumah, meaning that if it is tameh, because it's not a kabetza size worth. Also, according to some, it can't even accept tumah if it's less than a kabetza. Now, when it expands to a larger size, should have no bearing, according to those opinions. Yet, we found here that it does have bearing. So how do you explain that it has bearing? That's midrabbanan. The rabbanan said that even though technically midoraita, this cannot convey tumah, it can't be involved in tumah tochlim. Nevertheless, midrabbanan, we're going to say that it does have it, because look, now it looks like the correct size. Nobody's going to remember or know that it came from something smaller. So therefore they said, make this tamei midrabanan, so people don't get confused about these items. But then once you're talking about tumah midrabanan, how do you deal with pigul and notar, which are isurim d'oraita? If it doesn't work d'oraita, what's the issue of isurim? And there's no isurim d'rabanan by pigul notar. When it says, it's speaking about tumah d'rabanan that's associated with pigul over notar. And over there is a threshold shi'ur midrabanan. And if it crosses that threshold shiur, there will be tumah. Again, that is almost a rabbanan built on top of the rabbanan, because you have the fact that it's tameh is midrabanan, and the fact that when it expands, it's tameh is also midrabanan. So you would have thought, maybe we shouldn't say it there. Kamash malan, that we do say it in that case. Rashi over here says that the threshold for tumah with regards to pigul and notar is kabetza, similar to the way it is by tumah tochlim. It says, mitamita de yadayim. They are mitame, the hands, and that is if they have the requisite side of a kabetza. You could have the view that pigul notar are its mitameim bekezayit. Because just like isuram is bekezayit, so to tumatan is bekezayit. So maybe over there you don't need a kabetza word to make it tame. You could assume that the tumah that was imposed in the Rabbanan is associated with the isur of pigul notar. Just like the threshold for isur is kezayit, so too for the tumah it could be a kezayit. Either way, it would be a din d'rabbanan, because you have to get over that threshold. Whatever that threshold is, a kezayit kabetza, to get over that threshold when it expands is only rabbinic, according to these opinions. Therefore, you have a double d'rabbanan that we say, kamash malan, it is still in force. So tashma. Basar zakeina shaya bo shi'ur b'tzamak pachot mikishi'ur. So it had the requisite shi'ur, and then it shriveled up. So now it's less than the requisite shi'ur. Tamei l'sha'avar. Retroactively, it was to make because it had the requisite shiur. V'tahor mikan l'aba. Here too forward, it is tahor. Prospectively, it's tahor because it now lost the shiur. Here it's pretty clear that you're talking about the current state of the item. And now you can't answer on behalf of those that believe that it's always about the past. That now, oh, that's rabbinic. The rabbanan don't come along and make things tahor. The rabbanan will impose things to be asur, be tamei. They're not going to make something tahor that's d'oraita tamei. According to you, believe it goes after its original state, it should be tamei still, or it should still be able to convey tumah because it was above the threshold shiur, and now it went down below it. So Amar Rabba, Koecha demikar avabei, vahashto leitbei, ha leitbei. Says everybody agrees. Rabba now is about to narrow this machloket and say that everybody agrees that if originally it had the requisite shiur, and then dropped below the requisite shiur, meaning that it shriveled up. In that case, let pay. There's nothing to talk about. You don't have the shiur now. There is no tuma. But eichad demi kara lo hava bay. And in a case where in original state it did not have the requisite shiur, v'hashta hava bay, and now it does have the requisite shiur, midrabanan. At least midrabanan, there is tuma in the current state. Although Tosfot points out that the Gemara in Shabbat seems to have a safek about this issue with regards to Otzah and Shabbat, where you started out with less than a shiur, and then it grew to the shiur that's required for Achila, and then you had a Machshevet Achila, the Gemara has a question as to whether that's considered to be carrying on Shabbat. Why should there be any issue? Midoraita, according to this, anything that started out below the shiur and then swelled to the appropriate shiur is only a problem midorabanan, not a problem deoraita. So the Shita Mikubetzit simply says that midorabanan is not a reference to all shitot. Midorabanan is only a reference to those that believe that if we go after the Kamot Shayu, those that go after Kamot Shayin, it would actually be midoraita. So Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Reish Lakish, and therefore that Gemara in Shabbat would be following the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan. Or you have to say it's a case, which is what Rabbah is going to say in 1 second, where it was originally of the proper size, shrunk below that threshold, and then re-swelled to be at the original size, which was a problematic size. Or you have to say that it's a question with regards to Gugrogret, which are dried figs, and dried figs have unique status, as we will see when we get to the end of the sugya here, because they can be reconstituted to their original size, and therefore the Gemara's question, Shabbat is uniquely associated with Gugrogret, with a dried fig, and not a general question about something swelling above the shiur from below the shiur. So now, key plige. Where is their machloket? Kagon, shahayabo kishiur. It originally had the requisite shiur, vitzamak, and then it shriveled up, vichazar vitafach, and then it expanded again. So you have it shrivel up, and then you have it expand. So it had the requisite shiur, diminished below the threshold, and then came back to the original shiur. The question is, the Mar Savar yesh dichui bi'isura? Mar Savar ain't dichui bi'isura. Is there a concept of dichui by isurim? First of all, the concept of dichui we find by kodoshim, or by mitzvot in general, and that's usually something that's in the active or positive form, which is if something is going to be kodosh or ra'ui for a korban, and then somehow gets disqualified temporarily, does that make it dichui? Does that push it away from the capacity to do the mitzvah? I have a similar thing by mitzvot, by the Gemara in Sukkah speaks about the hadasim having fruits on them. If you have hadasim that have too many fruits on them, or more fruits than leaves, does that make it dichui? Does that push it away or disqualify it from being used to the mitzvah, even though afterwards you pick off the berries and then make it kasher again, that it has more leaves than fruits on it? So that's a question usually by a positive status. Is there dichui from the disqualification? Here the Gemara is discussing it in a negative form, which is that when you have isurim, or you have something like tuma, can there also be a disqualification that takes it out of that status? Now over here we're dealing with tuma and not isur. The Gemara formulates it as isur. From here you can either come to one of two conclusions. They're using a borrowed term. Even though we're talking about tumah here, they use isur because that's the terminology that's used other places. But the two aren't correlated. This has nothing to do with dichui b'isurim in other places in Shas. This is uniquely tumah-oriented, which is the view of the Karen Ora. On the other hand, the Gra and the Minchat Chinuch believe the fact that it uses dichui b'isurim, the Gemara sees this as being equivalent to dichui b'isurim in other places in Shas. And then you could ask questions from positions here versus positions in other places in Shas with regards to dichui b'isurim. So the fact that it uses isur in the face of tuma, there are no isurim we're speaking about here. We're only talking about tuma. Tuma is not an isur. Tuma is a status. It is something that can convey and cause problems, but it's not necessarily an isur. There are times when it can be an isur for a kohen when you're dealing with tumat meit, but by tumat tochlim, it's not usually an issue of isur. So therefore, again, it could either be a borrowed term or it could be more significant. So now you have here something that was of the capacity of the shiur that could convey to my kabetza size. Then it shrunk down. Once it shrunk down, what happens to this item in the new status? Is that a temporary status, a temporary hiatus, where it's not problematic? But then when it re-expands to the level of the original item, it goes back to having that status of isur. Or do we say that once it diminished, that pushed it off the track completely? It's no longer in the world of tumah. When it re-expands, it's not problematic. And that'd be the machloki between them. Is in this re-expansion, how do we view it? Do we view it in its current state? And its current state is similar to its original state. And therefore it can be mikabel tuma and convey tuma. Or do we say that it lost the possibility in that interim stage? And now in the new stage, it doesn't matter that it expanded now because it's out of the world of tuma. So mi ika, the mandamar deish dichui bisurim. Is there anybody who really thinks that there is a concept of dichui bisurim? That's none. Don't we have a mishnah that's found in Tarot? Kebetza ochlim, shenicha bechama. You have a kebetza worth of ochlim that you leave out in the sun that dehydrates it. Vinit ma'atu. And then it diminished, it shrunk, shriveled up. V'chein kezayit min amet, kezayit min anevela, uchadasha min asheretz, ukezayit pigol, ukezayit notar, ukezayit chelev, tehorim, v'ein chayavin aleihem, mishum pigol, v'notar v'chelev. The Mishnah is noting that there are different items that are in here. There's some items that reference to Tumah, there's some items that reference to Isur. Pigol, notar, and chelev are Isurim to consume them. Above a kezayit of a threshold, that is asur to eat them. So the question for them is the threshold of a kezayit. And the question is, are you chayav or not chayav? Whereas for the original items that are mentioned in the Mishnah, which are the kezayit of a mate, kezayit min anevela, kadasha min asheret, those are all items that are tamei, or convey tuma. And those are the thresholds for conveyance of tuma. So for them, the question is, whether when they shrunk down, are they tehorim or are they not tehorim? So there's two sets of items in the Mishnah. You have to note that just the difference that you have kebetz ochlim or you have kezayim minametz, kezayim nevela, kezadashim minasheretz, which are all items that convey tuma, and then they shrink, they are tohorim. Kezayit pigol, kezayit notar, kezayit chelev are questions of isur, and therefore they are in chayvin aleim if they shrink below the threshold. Hinicham b'gshamim, if you left them out in the rain, v'tafchol, and then they rehydrated and swelled back to their original size, so again here, Tmeim is for those items that were the threshold of Tuma, and Chayvin Aleim is for Pigol, Notar, and Chelev, which are Isurim, they regain their status. So you see over here, despite the fact that they went below threshold, when they come back above the threshold, they clearly are problematic. That is a strong refutation according to one who says that there is Tichoy bi Isurim. Now the question, you can look in one of two ways. One way to say the question is a dismissal of this view that there's dichoy b'isurin. Again, that will depend on what we said before. Is that just a dismissal with regards to tuma? Or is that a greater dismissal of the whole concept by isurin? So this doesn't necessarily mean that Rabba is rejected, because it could just be a rejection of the party that says that there is dichoy b'isurin. And then the Gemara is going back to the more fundamental question of whether it's kamochein or kamochayu. Although, if you do reject Rabba's explanation, which is compelled by the problem in the Mishnah that we brought previously, it's not definitive as a problem, and that is because the Gemara is going to try to bring proofs that maybe there are Tanaim that argue that this is actually a machloket Tanaim. Right. Tashma, tormim teinim ala grugurot b'minyan. You're allowed to take off fresh figs from dried figs, as long as you do it b'minyan, you do it numerically. So if you have here a set of 100 dried figs, and then you want to take off truma, but you don't want to take from the dried figs, you want to use fresh figs. If you do it by number, numerically, meaning you take off 10 fresh figs, that works. That's fine. Dried figs take up much less space than fresh figs. So if you do it volumetrically, you're actually going to turn out that you're giving much more than you need to. Because volumetrically, the fresh figs are much greater volume. And that volume is going to be, as Rashi says here, instead of being one-tenth, it's going to be one-fifth of the amount that's there. So if you do it b'minyan, it works fine. But if you do it based on volume, it's going to be problematic. So, iamar bishlama l'kamot shehayu misha'arinon shapir. If you say we go after their original state, then all of this makes sense. I'm changing the gears based on the Bach. And again, here, there are many that have kamot shehain. And that, you can see also the Shita Mikubetzit over here says that the Gemara sees this as a question on Rabba's interpretation, and that's why the Gemara is moving on now to look at Kamot Shehayu and Kamot Shehain. Alright, so now, if you look at them at the original state, then all this makes sense. Because then you can look at the 10 fresh figs versus the 100 dried figs and say, Well, in their original state, they were fresh figs. So now when I give 10 fresh figs, I'm really giving 1/10. Eliyamart kamot shehain, then if they are actually looking at it like they are today, havalei marbe b'masrot, then you're going to have a problem that you're actually increasing the amount of maaser that you're giving, and that's going to be problematic. Because now you have these fresh figs, you took off 10 of them, and now if I look at them biometrically, you're giving much more maaser than you need to give. So that's the problem. Now again, you did it by minyan to try to even it out. Now minyan works if you say the original status is what counts, then the original dried figs were fresh figs. So now when I'm giving fresh figs or 10 fresh figs, I'm giving, yes, the same number, but volumetrically I'm giving 1/10. On the other hand, if I believe that it goes after the current state, then even if I take off 10 fresh figs versus the 100 rugarot, when I look at it volumetrically, I'm giving way too much maaser. Oh, so what's the problem? Marbe b'masrot, titania. Marbe b'masrot perutav mitukanim u'masrotav mikukalin. Someone who gives too much maaser, yes, that which he leaves behind is fine. But the maaser that he takes off are a mess. Now that is, we'll have to think about this. If you take off more than you need, you were supposed to take off 1/10 in maaser. Instead of taking off 1/10, you took off 1/5. You took off 20% instead of 10%. When you do that, that which is residual left behind is mitukan. It's chulin. You took off, it's no longer tebel. What you took off that was in excess of the maaser now is problematic. There are different ways to formulate what the problem is. You might have maaser and chulin mixed together, which is that what you took off, 10% of it is really maaser. The other 10% is chulin, because you can't make something into maaser that's not maaser, so it doesn't get a shame maaser. And your problem now is you have maaser and chulin mixed together. That could be the problem. Or the problem could be actually much more serious, and that is similarly what Rashi says over here. Masrot mekukalim, tevel u'maser me'uravin. You have now tevel and maaser mixed together, because the maaser that you took off was only for that which you left behind, the residual you left behind. But the excess that you took off, you didn't think you were taking off maaser on that. You thought that that was maaser. And that means that you don't have in mind to take off maaser. It remains tevel. That chulin which you separated out remains tevel. And now you have a mix of maaser and tevel, which is a serious issue. And that's what it means, masrutav mikukalin. So it has to do with your mindset. Technically, you took off 10% from the totality here, because in the end, you took off 20%. Subsumed in 20% is 10%, and you took off the amount. So anything you left behind, those fruits are fine, because you clearly took off enough for them. The problem is the fruits that you took off, the excess that you took off, over there, you didn't have in mind for the maaser that you're being separating to cover them. You thought they were maaser. You were making them into maaser. So you didn't have in mind that the 10% you're removing covers everything. No, you had in mind that that which you're taking off is covering that which is left behind. That means that which you took off never changed its status. So for the 10% of it, it's maaser. But for the other 10%, it remains tevel. It remains in its original status because you didn't take off maaser. You didn't have in mind to take off maaser for that piece. Right, so you could say, if I'm giving 10% of this is maaser, and it covers everything that I left behind plus any excess that I'm taking off, the excess I'm taking off is a gift. So then you have maaser and maybe chulin mixed together. Less of a problem, still could be a problem, but you have less of a problem. You can give a matana. If you want to give gifts, no problem. Problem is that he's declaring this to be maaser, which says that he doesn't think that he's separated maaser away from that which is in that grouping that he calls maaser now. So elamai, so what are you going to think? L'kemot shehayu. So you're going to say, okay, let's assume you're right, that it goes after its original status, because that's the way you need to do this. Ema seifa. What are you going to do with the latter half of that tosefta? Grugarot alateinim. If you're taking dried figs off of fresh figs, bimida. That you have to do on a volumetric basis. Because if you don't do it on a volumetric basis, then you can actually come out less than 10%. So if you do it numerically over here, then you take out the grugarot, the dried figs, you take out 10 dried figs versus 100 fresh figs, they're not going to be anywhere close on a volumetric basis to 10%. Therefore, you have to separate out volumetrically. So you'll end up with more grugarot than 10. Even though you have 100 fresh figs, you're going to end up, let's say, 20 dried figs to make up volumetrically up to the 10%. So iamart bishlama kamochein shapir. If you say you go after their current state, that makes sense, because volumetrically, in their current state, you're getting 10%. Taking 20 dried figs for 100 fresh figs, volumetrically, that's 10%. Eliyamart b'kamot shehein, if you go and say it goes by the original status of the item, marbe b'masrotu, then you run yourself into a problem. You're taking 20 dried figs against 100 fresh figs. If you look at those dried figs in their original status, now you have 20 fresh figs against 100 fresh figs. Again, you're excess maaser. You're taking out 20% instead of 10%. So that is problematic no matter which way you explain it. Whether you explain it based on the current state, whether you explain it based on its original state, the two parts of the Tosefta make it impossible to explain it in that way. Ella, hocha b'chuma gedola askinan. We're dealing with chuma gedola and not masrot. V'reisha b'ayin yofeh, v'seifa b'ayin yofeh. And the reason that you have the difference in the seifa and the reisha and the seifa is because you want to do it b'ayin yofeh. You want to do it in a generous manner. Meaning that when it comes to truma has no shiur min haTorah. Chita achat puteret et akri. Even one kernel takes care of whatever your obligation is. The chamim instituted shiurim, 1/40th, 1/50th, and 1/60th, depending on how generous you are. If you're very generous, 1/40th, benoni, 1/50th. If you are somewhat miserly, 1/60th. Those are the shiurim for truma. So now the guy comes and wants to give, and he's going to give generously. So now, if it's truma, then it works out well, because when you have the case of teinim ala grogorot, when you're giving fresh figs against dry figs, we tell you do it by minyan, do it by number. Because then if you give by number, you're actually going to be more generous, because the fresh figs are going to give you volumetrically much more than you would have gotten had you given it volumetrically from the outset. And vice versa, if you're taking off dried figs from fresh figs, if you do it volumetrically, you're going to give more dried figs than if you do it numerically. Both of them would work because it's truma. Truma has no shiur. Either way you do it is fine. So we want you to be as generous as possible. So the Tosefta is telling you, do it in this manner in each case, because that way you'll be the most generous in terms of giving your truma. Excess truma, there's no such thing as excess truma. Truma can be anywhere from the one chita, one kernel, all the way to 99.99%. You have to have some residual. It's not truma because you have to leave something behind. But anywhere in that range is considered to be truma, and you avoid the whole problem. That's the case. What are you going to do with the next part of the Tosefta, which is Amar Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yosi, Abba Yenotel Eser Grugorot Shemiksoa Al Tishim Shebekelkala. So he says about his father, Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yosi, about Rabbi Yosi, that he used to separate 10 dried figs from the area where they were pressed or placed in the kli where they are pressed together. Al tishim on 90 that are found in the kalkala, which is in the basket where they're more expanded. Ve'ibi truma gdola eser mayabite. If it's talking about truma gdola, 10 is not a relevant number. 10 is a relevant number when you're talking about 10%, when you're talking about something that is a maser or trumat maser. Those are cases where you have a 10% number, that makes sense. But to talk about 10 in the context of truma gedola is meaningless, because there is no shiur for truma gedola. To speak about fixed numbers makes no difference. Now, he took from the grugorot shemiksoa, those are the ones that are dried out more. Since they're already dried out, they've shrunk and become smaller. And they're called, Hashema Kli, Karelu Ktsiot, Bekama Duchtin. Many times in Shas, you see the word Ktsiot. Tziot are these dried figs, because the kli that they're put into is a miktsoa, and the miktsoa is the place where they're pressed in, so they're tighter. Those that are in the kalkala, in the basket, are the freshly picked figs, and those are fresh figs. So obviously he's disagreeing or saying that his father did something different than that was noted in the Tosefta, because here he's taking out 10 by number, numerically 10 dried figs against 90 fresh figs, against what the Tosefta said, where when you have dried figs, you should do it volumetrically rather than numerically. Here we're dealing with trumat maser. Now, trumat maser is 10%, so now I understand where you got the 10% number, but then how do I go back and deal with the excess problem? The excess problem still exists, which is trumat maser is not much different than maser itself in the fact that it requires 10%. So then how can you go in excess of the trumat maser? The Abba Elazar ben Gamla or Gimla Gomel, they're all different girsot over here, or Gamliel even, who? The Tanya. Abba Elazar ben Gomel Omer, v'nechshav lechem trumatchem, it says there that your truma should be considered. Trumatchem is in plural. Truma shelachem, b'shtei trumot ha-katuv mendaber. That this is speaking about two different trumot. Achat truma gdola, achat truma maser. Speaking about both Truma Gedolah and Truma Maser, Kashem, she Truma Gedolah nitelet be'omed u'machshabah, just like Truma Gedolah is taken off be'omed on estimated basis, and be'machshabah, you have to deal with the meaning of both of those words. If you look in Rashi, be'omed means, shem yesh lo peirot arbei, he has a lot of fruits, ein sarich limdot, you don't need to measure them, you do not need to figure out how much is there. El be'omed, yitol echad mechamishim, you just do it on an estimated basis, you take off 1/50th of the amount, which is the Benoni. You estimate what 1/50th is. Tosafot in other places says that we do that because people are going to be afraid to be below the threshold. If they're afraid to be below the threshold, they're always going to get more. So it's a way to generate a position where you are more generous in nature by doing it by omid. Then the word machshava. Rashi over here says the word machshava is, kidamrinim ba'alma, notenina bitzad zeh v'ochel bitzad acher. You put your eyes on this side, and you go and eat on the other side. Meaning that simply by thinking, you can separate out the trumot and masrot. You don't have to do any dibor, and you don't have to take any physical action. So that's a machshava, according to Rashi. Tosafot over here already discusses whether that's true. Whether machshava is simply a thought process, which he does say in the end over here. Maybe that's enough, that's sufficient to do it, believe, that you can just, in your heart, do that. Although he does bring an alternative, and Rashi in Bechorot also mentions this, that maybe it's not enough to do belay, but it means it has to be articulated. Not that you have to physically separate it, but it's enough that you articulate the fact that it's not enough that you're thinking about it, but you have to articulate it. This might go back to what we've spoken about before with regards to Kodoshim. Every time we speak about Makshava versus Maiseh, many times we saw that the Baal Tosafot and Rashi say Makshava means Dibor. And same thing over here, the Makshava might mean Dibor and not just Makshava. But that again is Machloket Rishonim, Rashi here, and the Baal Tosafot here seem to favor that it's just about Makshava. Although, the Baal Tosafot note that Rashi and the Baal Tosafot themselves in other places seem to indicate that it might need, require Dibor, that actual speaking. There is a third view within the Rishonim that Makshava over here is not Makshava at all, but rather it's a synonymous with Omed. How do you do Omed? How do you do it by estimate? Be machshava. You figure out in your head what the amount is. And therefore it's just another way of saying, bomed, what, how do you estimate it? Be machshava. That's how you separate it out. So ma chuma gdola is done by omed umachshava. Kach chumat maser nitla by omed umachshava. It's done by estimate and through thought. Ma chuma gdola by ayin yafa. Af chumat maser by ayin yafa. So just like chuma gdola is given generously, so too, Trumat Maser is given generously. Now here there are two parts to the problem. Let's start with the Trumat Gdola part of it, which is why do you have to do Trumat Gdola Bomet? What's the issue of doing something by estimation? You only have to estimate something when there's a shiur that is required. Trumat Gdola has no shiur. To say that it's Bomet is meaningless in that sense, because you could just take out one kernel and you're done. So no matter what you take out, it's fine. So what are you estimating in that case? That's what Tosfot asks. He says, but it must be that they're speaking at a Durabanan level. Even though midoraita, you don't need it, and this is a pasuk that we're darshaning, nevertheless, midorabanan, you would require omed. But true, midoraita, you don't need to think so much, you could just take whatever you want off, and you would be done with the Truma Gedola. But nevertheless, midorabanan, there is a shiur, and that shiur has omed. So now then, you compare that to Truma Maser, and the shiur midoraita, that's a Torah requirement of 10%, over there, you take it off bomed. You take it off by estimation. Now, that creates the second problem, which is, if it's trumat maser, which is 10%, how are you taking it off by estimation? You said before that masrotav mikulkalin. When you take off masrot, then it's mikulkal if you take off too much. Trumat maser also has an exact amount. If that's the case, why isn't it considered to be too much when you take off in excess? If that's the whole point here, is that you do it by estimate in order to get more than you should have, and you're doing it by ayin yafa, that you're doing it in a nice and generous manner, then just like by Truma Gedola, it's nice and generous because you exceed the amount you have to give, but there's no amount. That's why you can exceed it. But here by Truma Maser, where there is an exact amount, how is it that we allow you to exceed that amount? How do we allow you to go over that threshold? Tosfot at first suggests that the Chachamim agree b'diavad to Rabbi Elazar ben Gomel's position, and that also leads him to ask, how is it possible that you can have Trumat Maser be given Be'omed and end up with more than you need, more than the 10%. So Tosfot answers over here that the difference is that by Trumat Maser, there is a minimum shiur and not a maximum shiur. Or in essence, it's a 10% threshold, As long as you don't intentionally exceed the 10% number, there's no problem. If you do it estimated and you happen to get over 10%, that's not a problem. The only problem is when you intentionally give more than 10%, because then you're clearly trying to exceed the 10%, and that excess that you put in is problematic. That might have to do again with the makshava that you had before. When you're clearly exceeding the number, then you're excluding whatever excess you have here from the tikkun, and therefore that's the problem. But if you're just doing by estimation, you're just saying, I'm trying to get to the 10%, I'm trying as best as possible, I probably will exceed it, but I'm trying to get to 10%. So you're not trying to say that the excess is trumat maser, as opposed to being, that is mitukan. You're saying, I'm trying to get roughly to 10%, because you're afraid to go under, you'll exceed it, but you're not exceeding it intentionally, and therefore everything is mitukan. So that's the way the Tosafot deals with this stira, to say that by trumat maser, you will have the right to exceed it if you do it by estimation. But that's because you're doing it by estimation unintentionally. Maser Rishon, where you can't estimate it, you have to do it by its exact number. And that's what it means in the Mishnah Avot. Al tarbe la'aser umadot. You should not do your masrot in a estimated manner. Because if you do it in an estimated manner, you're going to miss the 10% threshold. And that's a problem. If you miss the 10% threshold with maser, because maser is not something that you do by omid. It's not something that you do by estimation. That's a special dispensation by trumat maser. So even though trumat maser is 10% and maser rishon is 10%, the din will be different between them. That's one way to explain it. But later on, he goes on to say that he thinks the Chachamim disagree fundamentally with Rabbi Elazar ben Gomel. And even b'diavad, it doesn't work. So then, he won't have a problem. And everything works fine. So the Baal Tosafot then asks whether Rabbi Elazar ben Gomel thinks there's only a din by trumat maser, or is this also a din by maser rishon? And whether he accepts this issue of marbe b'masrot, or disagrees fundamentally with that problem of marbeh b'masrot. And that leads him to ask, how is it possible that you can have trumat maser be given be'omed and end up with more than you need, more than the 10%? And that also leads him to say that Rabbi Elazar ben Gomel rejects the whole concept of marbeh b'masrot. This is what Tosafot says, that Rabbi Elazar ben Gomel believes that the din is the same by maser rishon. That by maser rishon, you can actually take it off estimation also, and you can exceed it by giving it more generously. And that Rabbi Elazar ben Gomel does not subscribe to the Mishnah before that it says someone who's marbeh b'masrotav is mekulkal. He disagrees with that principle and argues on that principle. You can see that on the top Tosafot. He says, how do you know it's trumat maser in our case? Shumat etani tormim muki lahachi. Same, because the Braita, the Tosefta says tormim, it says trumat maser. Avahu adin b'maser rishon. Maser rishon could be the same thing. The mekish nami Rabbi Elazar ben Gomel. Rabbi Elazar ben Gomel thinks they're all the same. Maser Rishon, Trumat Maser, Trumat Gdola, they're all the same din. You take it off the Omeid, Umamakshova. He says, according to Elazar ben Gomel, you could even do this estimation by the Maser Rishon. So that's what Tosafot discusses, whether he totally dismisses this idea of being Marbeh Masrotav, and then you won't have a problem. Because then Elazar's opinion is based on this idea. You can do it by estimation, there's no problem of exceeding, and everything works fine. If you believe either he differentiates between Maser Rishon and Trumat Maser, then you have to explain why there's a difference, which we did. Or, if the Rabbonon agree with him, at least with regards to Trumat Maser, b'diavad, even though they don't agree with Maser Rishon, then again, you have to explain why by Trumat Maser you can exceed the 10% and not by Maser Rishon. And that's what Tosafot says. It's the difference between unintentional and intentional excess above the 10%. So Gemara says, Umina, Amar Abelezer Rabbi Yossi, Abba Yanotel Eser Gugurot Shemiksoa Tishim Shbekalkala. Again, let's go back and now look at this. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi is saying that you could take off 10 Gugurot on the 90 that are in the basket. That means that he thinks that you're doing this with Trumat Maser. Iyamart Bishlamala Kamoch Hayu. I mean, if you say that it was based on their original state, Shapir, then it works well. Because then these Gugurot now, where you're taking them off, were originally the size of the fresh figs, and it turns out you're taking off Trumat Maser. Eliyamart Kamoshahain, Butzilu. If on the other hand you say it's based on their current state, when you take 10 Gugurot, volumetrically, that's way below 10% of the 90 that you have, fresh figs that you have in the basket. Ki Adar Avdimi, Amar Ablazer, Shiny Gugurot, Hoviyachol, Lishulkan, Ulachziran Kamoshahain. Dried figs are different, because you can reconstitute them. If you rehydrate them, they will return to their original size or fresh state. So as opposed to other maybe dried items or items that shrivel up, That is a permanent change in the item, and you can't restore them to their original status. By dried figs, they are dehydrated, and you can just rehydrate them and return them to their original state. Since you can do that, if you give 10 gugurot, even though right now, volumetrically, it looks less than 10%, since it can be reconstituted with water, it's the equivalent of a 10% volume of the 90% of fresh figs, and that's why Rabbi Yossi, according to his son Rabbi Lazar, did it in that manner. So it's exceptional, it's unique with regards to gugurot, which would lead you to the conclusion that Rabbi Elazar, who says shiny gugurot, is the only place where we say the kamot shayu, but otherwise he paskins good kamot shehain. Or this could be an answer to the more fundamental question as to whether there is dichoy b'isurim or not, where Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, believes ain't dichoy b'isurim, but we have an alternate opinion that says that there is dichoy b'isurim, which is the sheet of the Keren Orah, and that's why the Keren Orah previously explained that the Tiyufta that we brought before about whether there's Dichoy B'Yisurim or not is not the last say in the Sugya, since according to him, the Sugya ends here, that it's actually a Machloket Tanaim. And therefore, yes, there is a Deya that ain't Dichoy B'Yisurim, but we have an alternate opinion that says that there is Dichoy B'Yisurim. Because according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, had it not been for the fact that you could reconstitute the Grugoret, there would be an issue. So we're going to stop here, 9 lines down on the top of Nun Hei Yom Aleph.